Hi, I'm Terry Meekan. Welcome to It's Our Business. It's Our Business are documentaries which get under the hood of companies and people to find out who they are, what they do, and how they do it. In this programme, we're taking a close look at the School of Homeopathy, which is in the business of training students all over the world to become homeopaths. I asked the principal, Manny Nolan, what homeopathy is and how the business operates.
Homeopathy is what is the second largest system of medicine in the world. It's used by 1 in 8 people in the UK, and actually it's incredibly popular here in Stroud. We've got a lot of homeopaths in Stroud and a lot of people using homeopathy and appreciating the benefits of it. One of the beauties of homeopathy is it's a natural form of medicine that works in line with the body's own immune system. All the remedies are made from either minerals, plants or animals and are very safe to use.
Before I drill down into the business side of things, better give us a bit of an insight into yourself.
My father started the School of Homeopathy back in 1981. Well, he was responsible for homeopathy kind of being reignited in the UK in many ways. He's often referred to as the grandfather of homeopathy in the UK. He started going to a study group, which then sort of grew and grew. And then out of that, a school was born in London. And from that, he was a teacher there. And then he wanted to start his own school. In fact, a group of students asked him if he would. He started the School of Homeopathy in Devon.
What's the prime function of the business at the moment?
Our prime function is to teach people how to be a homeopath. But we have a variety of different courses. So regardless of whether you're just interested in first aid homeopathy for home use and you want to do a very short course that you just study on your own in the comfort of your own home, or if you want to go all the way through to become a practitioner at the highest level, then you can do the practitioner training, which is 4 years part-time. You can do it by home study or attendance. We run the attendance course now from here in Stroud at Hawkwood College.
What's it cost to take yourself through a course from knocking on the door to coming out the other end with a practice certificate?
Now, if you want to be a practitioner, that's a lot of time and dedication, and it's a big financial commitment.
So what are we talking about in time, and what are we talking about in costs?
One weekend a month for 4 years. However, we do advise students that you need about 2 days a week to do the study. So there's a lot of home-directed study along the way. In terms of cost, it's around £2,000 a year. Right. And it's a 4-year course, so you're looking realistically, you're looking at about £8,000 to £10,000 to train as a homeopath.
And is that web based training or is that at Hawkwood House?
It's a mixture. We offer by paper correspondence course, or by e learning web based course, or by attendance coming to Hawkwood College, or you can do blended learning, which I think works very well, where you have basically a mixture of those tools coming together.
Yeah, how many people have you turned out from the college, do you think?
Oh, hundreds.
Have you?
Yeah, maybe even thousands. The school celebrated its 30th anniversary last year in 2011, and we have trained thousands of homeopaths. We have students in over 60 countries. We have graduates coming out every year. If I look at the Society of Homeopaths register of qualified homeopaths, you know, I'm always delighted to see hundreds of our students on that register.
What's the breakdown between UK students that you've trained and are now practitioners and overseas ones? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, I would say it's about 50-50. Yeah.
So you're actually an exporter of intellect then. So you should put yourself up with the Queen's Award for Industry. Yes. That's an export company. Yeah.
Well, the school does have a very good reputation internationally and in the UK of being of a very high standard. So we do get students enrolling from all over the world to do our courses, even though it's preferable to do it by attendance if you can. But the distance learning course is such good quality that even students abroad who have the choice of other courses still prefer to do ours.
What's the dropout rate? Do you find people take it up and then drop out, or do you find that they stick by and large?
Of course there's a dropout rate, as there would be with any training programme. I think on our attendance programme, the dropout rate is pretty low. Mm-hmm. It's also kind of self-selecting because students do a lot of reflective practice. So for every piece of work they do, they're doing their own self-reflection on that work. It's all about building their own self-awareness so that they can become a healer. So in that sense, if somebody feels that they're not right for homeopathy or the course doesn't suit them, it usually comes out pretty quickly in the first year or two, and then it's clear to them that it's not something that they should go on with. After that, once they enter into the third and fourth year, the course becomes very clinical. They do a lot of clinical training, they do clinical observation, they go into supervised practice themselves and start to see cases under supervision while they're still at the school. Then it's very clear that they're going to go on and become a homeopath.
When you say cases and that they undertake, are we talking about the treatment of sick people?
They are the treatment of sick people. I mean, you can take almost any ailment that you take to your GP, you can take to a homeopath, and they'll be able to assist you and help with that ailment, whether it's mental, emotional, or physical. I mean, a homeopath can't help you with broken bones and the types of things that you would take to A&E, but with anything else, they can generally help with. And homeopathy is very effective with chronic disease, which there's a lot of, and also mental and emotional disease, which on the whole, conventional medicine struggles with. So homeopathy can be incredibly helpful for that. So when a student is under supervised practice, they will be seeing, you know, might be friends and family to start with, but it'll also be patients as from the general public as well. But of course, they'll be coming with an issue, some kind of ailment. It could be something simple like hay fever or a rash, or it could be something more complicated like prolonged migraines
So you do draw down from your case histories the types of medicines, is it plants and remedies that you feel are necessary to treat these? Is there a Bible of homeopathy so you can say, right, this guy's or this lady's suffering from this and this is the treatment for it, you know, so headaches or aspirins in the conventional medicine world. Do you have a book of what needs to be given to people in order to what you believe needs to cure people in the homeopathic world?
Yeah, we have over 4,000 remedies in homeopathy, and it's continually growing. And you are looking for the medicine that most closely matches the disease state of the patient. So once you've taken a good case, and it does, with a homeopath, it takes 60 to 90 minutes with the first consultation to get a good case. Once you have that case, then you can start to look within the homeopathic materia medica or the homeopathic remedies at those that are the closest matches. And usually there'll be a handful that you're looking at. And then you differentiate between those to find the most accurate, best fitting. And if you get a good fitting remedy, then you will get a fabulous result.
So where do you source the products in order to give to people?
We have homeopathic pharmacies that produce the remedies for us through the usual pharmacy standards that you would expect to any medical pharmacy, whether conventional or alternative. So when we order the medicines, we order them direct from the homeopathic pharmacies.
Do the people that leave here with the certificate, is it a recognised national certificate, or is it a certificate that you issue from the school here? I mean, how can one person who wants to go to a homeopath be satisfied that they've reached a certain standard? Is there an accreditation anywhere?
Good question. Well, our course is accredited by the Society of Homeopaths, which is the largest registering organisation in the UK. They have over 1,500 homeopaths on their books, and they accredit courses, and we have to go through an annual review and then a five-year in-depth review to ensure that our course is at the correct standard, that we're graduating homeopaths at the right qualifications and at the right competence to step directly onto their register. So when looking for a course, it's always good to see if their Society of Homeopaths recognised.
Looking at your profile on your own website, I see that in a former life you were into brand management.
I trained as a graphic designer, and then my training was in London, and then I very quickly moved into brand design and did identity and brand design for a number of large companies, including Sainsbury's and QuickFit, and worked on the Greece Olympic logo. And so big, you know, big brands.
That was your base training anyway before you got into this. Creative advertising and design,
that type of thing,
marketing.
Absolutely. And then my wife and I sort of tired of London, really, and tired of the boardroom conversations, you know, the constant chat about finances and the bottom line and kind of general sort of usually a bit of a lack of respect for the customer. And we sort of felt like we wanted to do something that was a bit more fulfilling and gave something back to the community, was a bit more sort of worthwhile somehow. And that's when we moved into homeopathy, and that's when I went back to my father and talked to him about training as a homeopath. And the rest, they say, is history.
The company itself is a private company, which has got yourself, your father, and some other directors. How is it structured?
Yeah, it's a it's a family business. It's my wife and I that own and run the limited company.
That's with the School of Homeopathy.
It's actually under the banner InLight Limited. Yes. And we have the School of Homeopathy and Alternative Training under that. But they're both training companies. They both specialise in homeopathy. But we do some other courses to support the homeopathy and alternative medicine.
You have a publishing company as well, I believe, don't you?
We do have a very small publishing company, which is just to publish my dad's books on homeopathy. So everything we do really is about homeopathy. And then we have a very wide faculty that we work with. So we have 15 teachers, we have about 20 mentors, we have a network of 60 supervisors, we have the core faculty team that work at the School of Homeopathy. There's five of us in that. We're quite a big company, but when you see our office here, you can see
It's like a pagoda at the back of the at the pub at the top of the hill, but it's extremely nice, I must admit. Here, the actual people that work for you, the tutors, they do it under their own banner or they do it under your company's name?
Well, all the teachers that and mentors that are working for us are all practicing homeopaths in their own right. In fact, that's one of the things that we put a lot of emphasis on, is that we like those particular staff, teachers and mentors of homeopathy, to be in practice for at least 6 or 7 years before they work with the school. So their primary business is their homeopathic practice, and then they work with the School of Homeopathy.
So you find the students, and then you employ them on a contractual basis to do whatever. So, yeah. So effectively, that's your labour in the job, if you like, these practising homeopaths.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And they do, I mean, they do have headed paper with our brand and everything on for when they're communicating with our students. But they have dual roles.
Now, you've got an American representative and a Canadian representative. How do those two international representatives work?
We actually have four representatives, and our Japanese and Chinese representatives are license holders, and they run the courses and we run the quality assurance for them, and they pay us a percentage.
So would you say it was a franchise in that respect?
It's a license. I suppose, yeah, franchise, license, it's that kind of setup, except we maintain a very firm hold on quality control and brand.
Yeah, well, that's the same as a franchise, though, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's a franchise. I mean, that's a good way of doing it, to have a franchise.
So we've done that where it's been a different language. With Canada and America, that's a representative. So they're looking after the student enrolments and student inquiries, and then they're getting a commission.
What are the difficulties of running a business like this? Or aren't there any?
No, there are. There are, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of joys, because you are helping somebody to be inspired and to be educated and to learn something new and to work in healthcare and to help other people. The downsides are that although alternative medicine has been enjoying a boom for the last 30 years, it does come under pretty big criticism every now and then, because we don't have as much evidence in alternative medicine that we would like.
I find that interesting, because there was a report done by the MP Committee for Science and Technology, and they came up with some fairly startling conclusions that they didn't really want to see homeopathic medicines given the stamp of approval by the labelling companies, because they didn't feel that there was any empirical proof.
Well, we do have our critics. I think homeopathy has grown and been very successful. As I already said, you know, there's millions of people using it, second largest system of medicine in the world. And with that popularity, so our critics have grown. We do have some very outspoken critics of homeopathy here in the UK. And it does, of course, it does affect the business if it goes on and on. A bit of bad press once in a while, no harm done. But a steady campaign that drags on for years can get quite depressing and is hard to work with. And we are doing what we can to improve things. What's frustrating for us is that there are many things in the world that we don't have any evidence for, and it's hard to scientifically prove everything. There is no scientific proof that shows how anaesthetic works, but we wouldn't stop using anaesthetic. So the drug companies are doing the research. Why are they doing it? Because it makes them money. So they're only going to research in things that make them money. Now, to date, they haven't worked out how to make money out of homeopathy. Now, if they do manage to license homeopathy, then perhaps the drug companies will see a way of making money. Will that be better for homeopathy? I'm not sure it will. Will it mean that we get more evidence and research? Yes, it probably will, because they're the only people that are commissioning research. And you have to remember that a research study costs millions of pounds, and they want to see a return for it. One of the beauties of homeopathic medicine is it's so cheap and readily available and easy to produce. So these are not things that are easily controlled by a pharmaceutical company. So there are many aspects going on. And I would like to return to the point that you made about the evidence check at Parliament. It's interesting, if you look at that study, it was driven by and chaired by a known critic of homeopathy. If you look at the people that gave evidence, there were a lot of critics of homeopathy that gave evidence, some of which had absolutely no scientific background or medical background at all. It seems that their specialisation was being anti-homeopathy. Even the Society of Homeopaths, which is the largest organisation representing homeopaths in the UK, wasn't asked to give evidence.
How would you answer your critics, including those members of the Houses of Parliament, that came to the conclusion that homeopathy was just a placebo effect? What would be your answer to these people?
Yeah, there's a very easy answer for that. Basically, homeopathy, we know that homeopathy works above and beyond placebo because we see it working on animals, we see it working on babies, we see it working on the very young. We also see that not our homeopathic remedies don't always work first time. So we may see a patient over a period of 3 or 4 consultations, and the first 3 remedies might not work, but then the 4th one does.
How do you know it's the actual work that you do which is causing the cure and not some other aspect of recovery?
Again, because the patient doesn't always get better when you would expect them to get better. You know, you have to remember, when people come to see a homeopath, they've quite often tried a number of different approaches already. And then, almost as a last-ditch attempt, they think that they'll try homeopathy. So why didn't other therapies work? Why didn't other medicines have the placebo effect? Why suddenly, when they come to see a homeopath, would they get the placebo effect? And why wouldn't it work, you know, from the first consultation? It's also important to say that there has been a lot of clinical studies, double-blind clinical trials in homeopathy. There are actually 142 to date. Of those, over half of them were deemed conclusive, and of those, 85% showed that homeopathy works above and beyond placebo. And that is in line with what you would expect in trials with conventional medicine.
Who carried out these trials?
They've been done in a variety of different places. There, you can have a look at the Homeopathic Research Institute's website for this type of evidence. But I think there's been far better trials done. They may not be double-blind clinical trials, but if you look at the study that went on at Homeopathic Bristol, the Bristol Homeopathic Hospital, they carried out a study over a 6-year period with 6,500 patients, and they asked every patient whether they felt that their during follow-up treatment, whether they were getting better or not. And 70% said that they were getting better on homeopathic medicine. I mean, that's a good result.
That's interesting to know that there's actually a homeopathic hospital.
When the NHS was founded in 1948, homeopathy was brought in as part of the NHS. And during that period, many homeopathic hospitals were actually gifted over to the NHS. And it's very sad today that there's only 4 left. Almost criminal, if you think about it, that these were gifted over by homeopaths. And now there's only 4 left.
There seems to be some view that the use of this ultra-dilution technique really doesn't have the effect of actually giving people the full treatment.
If you look at how it works and you use old-fashioned Newtonian science and you're just looking at physical particles, then yeah, you're not going to see any physical particles in an ultra-diluted medicine.
Perhaps we better just describe what ultra-diluted medicine is for the for the listener?
Homeopathic remedies are potentized, and that means that they are serially diluted and vibrated to potentize them. And once you get over a certain number of dilutions and vibrations, there becomes a point where it's impossible for there to be any physical molecule of the original substance left in the remedy. And the homeopathic concept is that the less physical there is, the more energetic there is. And you are keeping the blueprint of the substance somehow is kept imbued in the remedy. And there have been very recent scientific experiments done that show that there is indeed a blueprint left in ultra dilutions.
Who did them?
Well, Luc Montagnier's work is the most recent and most interesting.
Who's he?
He's a French scientist that won the Nobel Laureate for discovering AIDS. And he's been doing a lot of work with AIDS and ultra dilutions and human DNA. And what he's discovered is that if you ultra dilute a water solution with white blood cells in, and then once it's gone past the point of there being any chance of there being any physical molecules of the white blood cells left at all, if he then puts the AIDS virus in that, the AIDS virus will still act as though there are white blood cells in that water.
So you're saying that even though you remove all traces of it, the traces are still there?
There's something still there. Yeah. Now, this is the closest scientific explanation we have for homeopathy. So the science is close, but it's not Newtonian science. You know, we're not looking at physical particles here. We're looking at something else. And we all know that science has got a lot to learn. That's the part of the beauty of being alive. You know, we don't know everything. And the day we do is the day we become gods, I guess.
So on the question of being a god and being the managing director, what choice of music would you like to have on the programme?
Ah, yes, well, it's got to be Bob Dylan, and it's got to be The Times They Are A-Changing.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times they are a-changing. Come writers and critics who prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin, and there's no telling who that it's naming. Was the loser now will be later to win, for the times they are a-changing. From senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't lock up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. The battle outside raging will soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times they are a-changing. Mothers and fathers throughout the land, and don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out of the new one if you can't lend your hand. For the times they are a-changing. The line it is drawn, the curse it is cast. The slow one now will later be fast, as the present now will later be past. The order is rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last, for the times they are a-changing.
With Jodie Giacomelli at the moment, who's a lady from Stroud, who's working in the admin office here. Do you have to keep track of all the students and the invoices and everything else? Is that what you have to do?
I've originally started and I helped set up the new e-learning website.
Did you actually have to get right down into designing the website as well? Or?
No, they Manny designed it and Hostpipe built it. So I just populated it basically with all the copy. So I wrote some of it on used existing material. Populated it with all the resources, so all the audio files or the audio visual files, all the diagrams which needed to be put into PDF format, and it was a lot of work. It took a few months.
A resource which people pay for and then download? In other words, it's a part of the website you can't get at unless you've paid your money for the course.
You have to pay for the course and then you get a sign-in, a password and username to get onto the website.
What do you like about the job? What's the people like here? Are they good?
Oh, it's the best job I've had. They are so nice and sweet. And it's just the best atmosphere, the open plan area of the office. It's just a really nice atmosphere to work in.
I have to explain to listeners here that as you go down the main road from the Bear down towards Dunbridge Road, you can't actually see the back of this particular house, but when you come through where the office is built, it's really well done. It's lovely gardens, and there's like almost like a mini pagoda at the back where everybody
works,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's so secluded.
Yes.
You wouldn't know it was there unless you came down here.
So when you say it's the best job, what did you do before this one?
Well, I've had pub jobs, and I worked in Costco doing demonstrations for people. So there was always issues with people. And I never wanted to, when I came out of university, I didn't want to get a big job, just one another person in a massive company. I wanted something where I kind of made a difference and I really...
You've got Italian in you, I think,
yes,
Stan. I've been told I was expected to have somebody come and speak in fluent Italian.
I know, I wish.
Are your parents Italian or are they grandparents?
My grandparents from Italy.
Are they?
I look the least Italian.
Can you speak any Italian at all?
No, I really want to learn, though.
Oh, well, you've got plenty of time to do that.
Yeah.
What did you do at university? What degree did you get?
I did writing contemporary fiction.
Oh, interesting.
Creative writing, yeah.
So that was that helps you put copy together, I suppose, with these people.
Definitely. And it's amazing to actually be doing something with my degree.
Is there a Harry Potter novel in there somewhere?
There's a novel in the pipeline.
Is there? Have you started it?
Yeah, I'm working on it, yeah.
Oh,
it's
excellent.
Getting there.
any preview you can tell anybody what it's about?
Well, I'll say it's a science fiction dystopia, post-apocalyptic.
Sort of Mad Max and Stroud, you mean?
Yes.
Well, there's a lot of Mad Maxes in Stroud,
aren't
there? Tell you what, why don't you give us a choice of music that we can put into the programme? What track of music would you like to hear?
Okay, well, my brother's got a band called The Vast.
What's a bit of a plug?
I believe that you've already played a bit of a plug, yeah. But if you've got one of their tracks...
Well, if I haven't, I'm sure you can get me one.
Yeah, I'm sure I can send you an EP, of course.
So which track do you want off it?
I really like Someone Else's. That's my favourite track.
Someone Else's.
Someone Else's.
Not your brother, Someone Else's.
Yeah.
What's that name of the track?
Yeah, it's the name.
Okay, Someone Else's. Thank you.
daylight as you judge me. Someone else's love and as much yes I long for you. Someone else's now. I just wish I'd stop dreaming those dreams. I just wish I'd stop dreaming those dreams.
They do say behind every great man is a great woman, and at the moment I'm with Amanda Norland, who's the wife of Manny, Manny being the principal. And Amanda, what do you do in the business here?
I'm the co-director of the business with Manny, and my role primarily is to look after the welfare of the students, the tutors. I also look after key business areas such as all the new enrolments, new inquiries. I look after the supervision process, and I basically wear quite a few hats, and that changes as it's needed.
So on a day-to-day basis then, Manny would get up in the morning, come to work and do what, as opposed to yourself? He would do the business element, the marketing,
yes.
the publicity, the keeping in touch with people?
I would say that I'm firmly in the present. I'm looking after everyone's needs and the new students who are coming in. So I'm looking after all this sort of people contact, if you like. And what Manny's doing is he's kind of focusing on the future. He's very much thinking about strategic ideas, thinking up new projects, networking with people and talking about the business. He's kind of creating new opportunities, and he puts the feelers out and makes a lot of things happen. I help him to make it happen.
Manny told me that it's about £10,000 you get from standing start to a finished certificate over a 4-year period. How many students on the books at the moment are there?
So we've got home study students all across the world. At the moment, I would say we've got about 300 active students. We have about 40 to 50 active attendance students here in Stroud. On top of that, we have a lot of students who have enrolled onto the course but are somehow dormant.
Yeah.
But they can come back at any time.
Right. But they don't have to pay the £10,000 up front, all these people. They're all doing little chunks at a time.
Exactly. Well, some people choose to pay up front because they want to make the, you get a saving for doing that.
Yeah.
And you also fix the fee for the whole duration. But most people, I would say, like to pay as they go so that they can spread the cost. That's equally good for us.
It seems a well-organised business because I should imagine the overheads are the home, really, and they go to the server, the training courses, because they're repetitive, and then the commissions to the tutors and the homeopathic people.
Yes.
They paid for the job, are they?
Most of them are paid for the job as freelancers.
Yeah.
There are a few key members of the school staff who have a retainer. They're not salaried, but they have regular income. But I would say that in terms of how we view the income, we like to invest a lot of it back into the business.
Mm-hmm.
So we're constantly coming up with new ideas and new developments. So, for instance, the website has been in development now for a few years, and we're about to launch a whole new business proposition, which is the e-learning course and website.
Yeah.
And we've invested tens of thousands into that.
So that's been done locally by a local web developer?
It has, yeah. They're called Hostpipe. They're down in town. And we've worked with them for a few years now. They've redeveloped our alternative training website, and they're now redeveloping the whole of the other websites, the School of Homeopathy, Inlight. And they're working on the next big project, which is this whole new e-commerce, e-learning site, which is, it has been a massive project, and it should launch sometime this year.
If you had a nameplate on the door, which you haven't got, would it be School of Homeopathy, Alternative Training, or what would it actually be?
That's a really good question.
I ask it.
We would be Inlight Limited.
Inlight Limited.
So Inlight Limited is the umbrella brand, if you like, which holds the School of Homeopathy, Alternative Training, and Yonder Cot Press together. Mm. So they're kind of like the sister brands.
Your customers, they have a contract with Inlight Limited?
At the moment, the customers are more familiar with the School of Homeopathy or Alternative Training. And the proposition of Inlight Limited is quite a recent one that we've started to communicate through the website and through our emails and so on.
You don't think it's going to dilute the message, confuse people that are already out there?
Well, it confuses us, so maybe it could. No, I think we've always felt that we had a vision of our future and our future company, which is more of the Inlight brand. Mm. And it takes on all the values and the perception of the school, which is the radiating health and so on, the brand idea of the sun. But we just need to start communicating about that. So we've gone on from being Alternative Limited, Alternative Training Limited, to Inlight Limited, and the other companies sit within that.
The Chinese and Japanese elements are almost like a franchise. Are you going to insist upon the brand name being worldwide as well, so that although they approach people in their own manner and run it to your own, to the standards which you insist they must run it to, you're still going to be called, you know, you're still going to have the brand name, are you?
Inlight Limited.
Yeah.
At the moment, I don't feel that we're quite there at the moment. That's where we're aiming towards. So I think in the future, at some point, Inlight Limited will be the most recognised part of our company. Mm. At the moment, we're not at that stage. And so our partners will be known as School of Homeopathy, Japan or Hong Kong, China. Mm. And that is what's most important to them.
School of Homeopathy you will keep as a brand name, if you like.
Oh, yes.
All the way through.
Well, it's got 30 years of heritage. It's so important. We are so aware that we need to maintain.
Why bother to change it? Why, if it's not broke, why fix it?
Yeah, well, you never know. Maybe Inlight won't become the front-facing customer name. It's something that we've put in place to make sense of the structure of the business to ourselves.
You say you look after the welfare of some of the students. Does that mean that you find them hotels for the weekend courses and things like that? Do you get people coming from overseas and things like this?
We do, yes. We have people coming from overseas to attend all sorts of things, the attendance course, seminars and different workshops and so on. What we tend to do is to put them up at our venue, which is all-inclusive. So it's a... The Hawkwood site is residential. They put all the meals on and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that side of it is taken care of as part of our package.
So you don't actually have to find hotels for them?
We don't, but we do offer a bed and breakfast list for the local area for people who want to have that bit of separation and quiet.
Transportation from the airport? I mean, I presume they've got to make their own way here, have they?
Most people do. We sometimes help out with finding the right companies to book through and so on. So we'll give a helping hand, but we don't actually make the bookings for them. Some of our partners, we'll organise transportation for them.
What about foreign students and how many a year are you getting coming through the door, physically coming through? You're not the e-learning ones, but the ones actually physically attending the courses.
Yeah, so we have got a few overseas students that come to every month to the attendance course. We have someone who comes, well, she's actually Israeli, but she's now living in Berlin, Germany.
It's a brave move.
I know, it really is. She's a brave lady.
Politically not correct. Restart.
Yes. We have somebody else who's American, and she actually lives in Italy, so she flies over from Italy every month. We've had people come from America once a month. That's entirely possible to do that, and they make it work really well.
Is there a profile of the type of students you get? I mean, age-wise, are they mature? Are they middle-aged? Are they young? Or does it range, you know, is it people that want a second career?
It's all those things. What it tends to not be is the very young people who are maybe college leavers or starting out on their career, because quite often it's not the first thing that they would think of. What we see is a lot of people who've started families, so they're starting to think about their family's welfare and health matters. Quite often they will see a homeopath, find out how amazing the results are, and then want to take on that responsibly to themselves, that they'll learn to a certain level how to look after their family. And a lot of people have been through maybe one, two, even three careers and just feel like they need a completely new direction. Some people become seekers, so they're actually looking for a different purpose in life. They're fed up with the just the run-of-the-mill working situation, and they want to find that, you know, something else about what they're doing in their life.
Were you into this before you met Manny, or did you get into it when you met Manny?
I didn't really know about homeopathy before I met Manny.
No.
But I was always into alternative practices and astrology and healing. Myself and my sister were very like-minded in this way, and she went on to study yoga and Ayurvedic medicine and so on. So we often talked about these things and went on little courses and things. When I met Manny, I then became aware of homeopathy and had some treatment myself. And that just kind of opened the whole door for me.
I mean, the beauty about Manny's success, I would have thought, was his background in brand management and business management. You know, he hasn't come straight out of the woods with a pile of herbs. I mean, he's actually been into a lot of business environments, so he's put the thing together as a business. Even though the beliefs are there, he's still got the business head on him as well. Which I imagine so many people could fall down else if they didn't have a business sense.
It's so important to have that, because it's all very well to want to have high ideals or want to change your life and do something more meaningful, but if you can't sustain it and run a business, it would fall flat. So,
fine words, butter no parsnips, as my gran used to say.
Exactly. And between us, I think we found our natural inclination. So we kind of match each other in the business. We both provide the two sides of the coin, if you like. So Manny is very much of the business nature, and he likes to make new progress and new projects.
So what are the difficulties in the business?
In my job, I think the difficulties sometimes are that there's no beginning and end. There is a constant stream of people who need help and need assistance, and everybody, of course, needs it quite immediately. I'm used to design background as well. I used to work in a design business, and that was very much project-based, where you have an aim and a deadline, and you just...
It's a 24/7 job then, basically. It's a bit of a conveyor belt.
No, it doesn't feel like that. But I think if there was a challenge to the job, it's the feeling that there is. It's not so project based. It is an ongoing flow of work, which is very enjoyable. And in fact, I see it as my homeopathic practice. It is.
Do you get a break? Do you and Manny get leave once a year?
We try to at the moment, but we haven't managed it.
What choice of music would you like to have in the program?
Well, I'd like to have Elbow, the song One Day Like This.
Elbow, the song One Day Like This. Well, One Day Like This at the moment is rain outside. I guess the listeners might even be picking it up. We started this interview in blazing sunshine, and now it's down with rain.
Curses.
And I've travelled down to Ofcom near Exeter to see Misha Nolan, who was the original founder of the School of Homeopathy. First of all, Misha, I'd like to sort of talk a bit about your background. Homeopathy and medicinal activities were not in your mainstream originally.
With my science A-levels, I went to be a laboratory assistant with the MRC in Hammersmith Hospital, an immersion into the field of science that was government-sponsored rather than sponsored by outside agencies with a vested interest. And in medical research, those that have the vested interest are big pharmacy. So the research tends to be driven by...
I hear echoes of your son's complaints here. Yeah, report.
Absolutely. And I realised that I loved the people, but actually didn't like the field of research.
You come from an artistic family. Mm. You've got an artistic bent, but your initial professional disciplines were in science.
Ah, well, God is in the equation as well.
Very profound. So you've got a polymath approach to life, correct. Science and arts. When you finished doing this research, you went off on a completely different tangent. You went into the film business, I believe, didn't you?
Well, I tried science and then decided that actually that wasn't the life for me and that movies would probably suit me better. And I certainly had a great deal of fun.
Well, how did you jump in those days to getting jobs in...
Oh, that was easy.
Was it?
You just walked down Wardour Street and popped into the doors of the filmmakers and said, have you got any jobs?
As simple as that?
Yeah. Yes. I was a cutting room assistant.
Started off on the cutting room floor
for
6 months, a year?
I never came out of the cutting rooms. I just progressed to being a film editor. My period in Hollywood was cutting movies. I was a film editor. As for making films, editing and directing kind of flowed in together. So when I was directing, I wouldn't be editing. And when I wasn't directing, I would be editing.
Did you live in Hollywood or did you move there? Or was it one-off projects that you went there for?
I lived there for about 8-9 months.
And then back to UK, still in the film business?
Yes, because when I came back, I was interested in making documentary films, and specifically in the field of the New Age field. New Age was kind of beginning then, early 70s. And there were some really interesting people that I thought would be fine to interview and to turn into documentary films. So in the process of researching that, I met those who would subsequently be my teachers. And I just became increasingly fascinated in the world that they lived in and the thoughts that they had about the nature, not just of healing, but of life and consciousness.
When did you decide to give up the film business and move it more into the healing business?
Ah, well, that was partly because of Manny, too.
Well, you're single father, weren't you, at that point, I think? So you decided that we've got to get something a bit more...
home-based.
So did you decide to become a teacher of homeopathy and leave the film industry behind?
No, by this point I'd already left the film. The film industry had left me behind.
Had it?
You have to be active in it in order to stay on the ball. You come off the ball and it rolls somewhere else. And that was fine with me because as filmmaking disappeared over the horizon, so patients, mostly mums with kids, came for advice with regard to their health, the health of their children first.
How did they know that you had the...
The word of mouth.
Just the word of mouth.
Just word of mouth.
So you were giving advice to, or you were learning these skills, and then giving advice to a few select friends, and then it...
You got it.
...rolled that way.
It certainly did. It was like a snowball producing an avalanche. I got busy fast.
We now had a situation where there were a group of clients who were paying it, or were you still giving free advice at that point in time?
Ah, well, being a single parent, I had the assistance of a state, a dole, which I didn't have to queue for. It was automatically available at the post office. So that tided me over that period of change. And then, of course, I started charging and got off the dole. I was on it for about 3 years.
Did you establish a practice of rooms, consulting rooms in London?
Yeah.
How long before we moved down to Devon?
Ah, well, the move to Devon was in 1981.
But if your clients were all in London, wasn't a major leap of faith to come down here and leave all those clients behind and have to restart again?
Ah, well, that's not difficult. I leap with faith, with readiness.
You might do, but at the same time, you haven't got any clients when you come back to Devon.
Ah, well, I went back to London once in a while to pick up on those that I'd left. moving to Devon was also coincident with starting up the school. So I had a second income stream from students as well as from patients.
So effectively you decided to change from being a practitioner of homeopathy, you wanted to become a trainer of homeopaths.
That's right.
And these clients that came to become teachers in Devon here, they came by word of mouth, or did you start, from a business point of view now, did you start advertising the business, or
all word of mouth? All word of mouth. We cooperated together with the College of Homeopathy in London, at which I was a teacher, prior to moving over here and starting the school here. So I had some teaching experience before coming here. The international side of the school was started by myself and Stuart Gracie, with whom I had a collaboration. I did something like 25 years ago.
The international aspect of the school was founded by yourself down here in Devon. Mm-hmm. And it was international because you were getting international students coming over?
It was international because it was a home study or a correspondence course.
The old traditional way, by the mail?
Yes.
Which, of course, Manny's now turned into...
It's now electronic.
Electronic.
Yes.
E-learning.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is the modernisation process that he's brought with his marketing ideas.
Totally.
One of Manny's concerns is the possible legislation of homeopathic remedies, the labelling of them, coming under closer scrutiny by government bodies. Mm. Do you have a view on that yourself?
Sure, it was a threat that seemed very real a few months ago that has passed. So for now, it's no longer the threat.
Because
will it happen again in the future? Yes, it might. So we need to remain vigilant.
Because there was a view taken by the Select Committee that because the efficacy of the medicines could not scientifically be proved by themselves, then they weren't happy to see the labelling done under a professional body. Mm. But you're saying that's passed, that threat's now passed.
No, that's a different issue.
Is it?
Yes. And that threat hasn't passed.
So that threat hasn't passed. How are you lobbying to divert issues which may affect the business?
Mm-hmm. I'm not, so I'm not involved in this. I never have been. I've steered clear of the political activities in homeopathy throughout my professional life in homeopathy. But there is one thing I would like to say about it. It has to do with democracy. The idea in democracy is that people should have the right to make choices about their lives. And having the right to make a choice about what medicine you use is fundamental. I think I'd like to stand on that.
There didn't seem to be any objection in the report to the fundamental right of people to choose what they had. Hmm. It was just a question of authorization, branding and labelling.
Well, I'd like to... Yes, well, that part is nobody's business. It's up to you and me to decide what we're going to go for, not for others to decide whether it's correctly branded or not. I don't like the idea of a father state that looks after its citizens as though they were small children that have to be told how to behave.
Of course, there is a view that maybe it's worthwhile fighting the corner on a more vociferous manner rather than just saying, well, it's up to the people to decide and not getting political, because those that are politicians then gain the greater power, greater view.
Absolutely. I think there is a place for politics. It's just not one that I've chosen.
Rounding up, where do you see the role of homeopathy in healthcare?
Hmm. Well, I would love to see it have a primary place in healthcare rather than being relegated to the background.
I'd like to ask you now, what's your piece of music to end the programme with?
Ah, well, let's end with the Beatles. Something like, Here Comes the Sun.
All right.
You've been listening to It's Our Business by Terry Meekin. It's Our Business are documentaries which get under the hood of companies and people to find out who they are, what they do, and how they do it. To make the colour, depth, and detail of your business available 24/7 worldwide, contact terrymeekin.com. You can also visit www.terrymeekin.com, where you can hear and download more documentaries in the series.